And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show.
Monday through
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And it's another edition of Hoops Adjacent on the Athletic NBA Show. David Aldridge here in D.C. out in the Bay. My man Marcus Thompson, he rejoicing of another 50 piece from Steph Curry the other night. Man, what's up?
Rejoice is kind of strong. I was chilling.
You were chill? Oh, just because that just happens all the time now.
You know what I'm saying? I've seen this. You know what I'm saying?
Marcus, how about your boys? Who were they playing last night?
Atlanta.
Play last night?
The Hawks.
How about your Hawks announcers like dissing the 50 piece? Like, is it that big a deal? Did you hear them?
No, well, they went back.
Oh, yeah. They were like, I guess when he got the 50-50, you know, of course, the place went nuts. And they were like, oh, well, is that really that big a deal? Why are they all up excited about him getting 50? Like, okay. Like, I guess people just get 50 all the time, I guess.
I mean, yeah, you know what I'm saying? Especially in Atlanta, right? You know, like, that's a wild thing to say, right?
Just another dude getting 50. Ain't no big deal.
That's pretty. Why y'all trimming off 50?
You know what I'm saying? Like, damn, the hater rate is thick tonight.
They had something like that happened to them a few years ago where the announcers were, they did something. I'm trying to remember what it was.
What, the Atlanta announcers?
Yeah, and the Atlanta announcers, again, were kind of like, oh, what's the big idea or whatever. They were just kind of poo-pooing something.
Come on, get some love. Come on now.
Right? Like, it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt. Right? Like, it just doesn't hurt. You know what's interesting about that last night? You know, I was big on the Hawks. I think the Hawks
are, I still think they're going to be really good. They just seem like they're bored right now. I don't know why.
But, man, like – Trey was like low key subbing his teammates, right? Like after the game, he's like, "Yo, man, when they was trapping me, like you know, our guys got to get more. Do you see them?" He's like, "But they know what to do when Steph gets trapped." Like I was just like, "Hey, what are you shots for?" Like he was impressed by the 50. Trey was impressed by the 50. He didn't think that was light.
He was like, damn, that's shit. That's good. I ain't tripping off of that shit. So
poor yeah. Kevin Herter. Like Nate McMillan is cold blooded, man. Like he was just leaving that dude 101 with Steph. Like, why are you doing this?
I found it. They did it when Harden scored like 60 against them. They got really upset about him scoring that many points. And this were some of the quotes from that night back in December 2019. "I should have kept shooting" was the body language. Quote, "He's yucking it up with Tyson Chandler." And quote, "That's all it's about with Harden is the point." So this is on brand for them. They tend to.
Is it the radio? Is it radio or TV?
It was, I don't know.
TV.
I don't know.
What did Vince Carter on TV?
Oh, wasn't Dominique? Usually it's Dominique.
Yeah, it could have been.
Could've been.
Sounds like something Dominique would say, huh?
I'm just saying, like, come on, guys. You know? Man, I mean, it's crazy what people
I mean, you look, when I wrote my book, Dynasties, the 10
Dynasties, GOAT teams, that's out now in hardback.
10 GOAT teams to change the NBA forever. Part of it was to establish some appreciation and some, you know, love for the greatness that exists in the league.
Absolutely.
Not the hate, I mean, not the hate, but like, yo, let's appreciate some of these legends. Right?
Oh, by the way, let's introduce.
Yeah, we probably
20 minutes into the show. Amin El-Hassan
from Metalark Media. You don't need an introduction. He go in the fridge. He take his shoes off.
Right. Man, get whichever one. You know what's in the fridge. Go on, man.
97 hours into my record.
There you go. All right. So, I want to talk about the league and everything that's going on. We'll talk about Sarver and all that. But, hey, first of all, look, I gotta tweak my boys down in Miami a little bit. So y'all pick a fight with Jokic. Jokic blasts your guy, and then y'all don't make no players available afterward? Come on now. Come on now.
While the players weren't available, they was going over the game plan for how to deal with the Jokic brothers.
Right.
Because somebody need to tell them to chill out.
You think that's really them, though? I think that's just somebody that just made up a name.
Case it is.
Ain't no picture of them. Ain't no Abby. You know what I'm
saying?
That's
what's scary about it, right?
Two tweets.
You just know they got on like steel-toe boots and a machete under them.
So first of all, I heard the Miami Heat sat out due to protest for not being involved in Marcus's book. He just conveniently left. The team that changed free agency and changed the positionless basketball, all that was
won
just
a couple of chips.
Not good enough for Marcus.
They're in there, dynasties.
They are in there, man. What you mean? They in there.
The Jokic brothers, Mike Singer of the Denver Post, confirmed via text message with the Jokic brothers that was their tweet.
The Jokic brothers.
That is real. Which led to this really funny tweet by our friend Josiah Johnson.
Yes.
You guys saw that one where it's the picture
of
future?
Hold on. Let me
pull it up here because I saw it and I started dying. It's basically for the listeners who can't see the picture. It's the very famous picture of Future leaning over the not Future, what's his name? Whatever. They're leaning over the board. It says the Jokic brothers trying to figure out how to add a profile picture to their Twitter account. And then his caption underneath is, it's harder than it looks.
That's funny. I'll just say this. I know the Morris brothers. I know they are not Fugazi. They're for real. Yep. I get it. They're from Philly. They're two tough guys. Yes, they are. I ain't messing with no Serbians. I'm just telling you that right now. I ain't messing with no Serbians.
I think Markeith can do that. Markeith made that clear, didn't he? Jokic 1, Smooth 0. Like, let's move on.
Y'all can bring the noise if you want, but I ain't messing with no Serbian. No Serbian brothers ain't doing it. No, thank you.
That's war-torn right there, man.
You know what I'm saying?
I get it. Philly's a tough town, but like,
right.
I feel like when you're war-torn, you grew up war-torn anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little different.
I remember talking to Tony Kukoc when he first got to the Bulls, and that's when I knew, oh, that's some different shit over there. And he was talking about how they had to practice outside, but they had to be careful because they didn't want to dribble on a mine. I was like, what?
I'm calling bullshit. Because that's the other thing that happens. Sometimes these people come with stories.
This is their version of I walk to school in the snow. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You dribbling ain't lying to me.
Landmines. Come on, man. You had a child, man. would you just say, you know what? Go ahead, man. Have fun.
Like, he was just saying it was rough growing up, you know?
He had it rough. Yeah. A little hyperbole. I don't know Jimmy Butler. He just always strikes me as a real one. Is that true about Jimmy?
Jimmy's a tough guy. I mean, he's a tough guy, but, you know, I'm just saying, I ain't messing with no Serbians. That's all I'm saying.
He was doing a lot of talking after the fact.
Coming to back and all
like
that.
I didn't like that from Jimmy Butler.
To be fair, we have the picture of them searching for them in the back. You guys see the picture of Andy Ellisberg?
But Andy trying to be the peacemaker.
Guys, you don't want this. And it's like the whole
GM. The GM should not have to do that post ass whooping like that. He should not have to also keep his guys in check.
Fight and win the game.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Amin, can I ask you about these dubs? And I'm asking you specifically because, you know how they play and what they're about and the goal of Steve Kerr as much as anybody. But also, when we first went through this, you went through this whole cycle of saying, you know, the Warriors are legit, and people were saying, no, they're not, and then they win the championships, right? Having been through it, going through it again, I mean, they're the top defense in the league. They're 9-1. How legit is this Warriors team?
I think, well, for me, the legitness comes from two players. It doesn't come from the record. The record is the record. They could be 8-3 right now, or 8-2. They could be 7-3, 9-1. That's not the point. The point is two things. One is the defense is elite, as it was last year, but it's now you're building off of what we did last year. And then two, and this is probably more importantly, the young guys on the team have figured out, oh, this is how we want to play. So I don't know how years work anymore because of COVID, but during the 2019-2020 season, when everybody was hurt and, you know, this cavalcade of no names blessed the
floor. We call that the D'Angelo Russell Warriors.
There you go. For all those guys, they were learning on the job. They're trying to figure out how, wait, what? And most of them are just like, and I'm in the NBA too. So there's a big part of it is you're like, it's the NBA. And Steve can talk about wanting to play a certain way, but it's harder to enforce that and to build on that if all the main guys that make that way of playing happen are not there. Steph was hurt. Draymond was hurt. Klay was hurt. And then Iguodala's gone, and there's no more Bogut. There's no more David West. There's no more any of these guys who played, who kind of exemplify that offensive system. So Wiggins gets there, and he's like, yeah, kind of, I get an idea, but like we're just running up and down doing our own thing. Last year, now Steph plays half the season, or not half the season, but for the start of the season, Steph is kind of beleaguered, and the team's getting blown out, and when they go down 15, they're kind of hanging their heads, and no one really gets it, right? And it took kind of like, I guess, a conversation between Steph and his people to convince him that, hey, man, 2 years ago, everybody knew we're down 20. So what? Steph will get that back for us within 3 minutes of the second half. Right. But these kids haven't seen the miracle. I've heard the rumors. It's kind of, I'm a Star Wars guy. It's kind of like the trilogy that came out where people heard about this Luke Skywalker dude. Ain't nobody seen him. Maybe this Force thing ain't real. Right.
Till my boy Han Solo said, it's all real.
It's all real. It's all real. And so that's, they had to tell Steph, like, you need to remind them that this, all that was real. That wasn't like a fantasy. That wasn't because Kevin Durant was there. This is who I am. And I think it started with the 61-point game against the Blazers. And then after that, they kind of started to figure out, oh, okay, we're always in this as long as he's healthy on the floor.
Yeah.
But then there's still parts of it where they still don't get it. Where they don't get that when Steph passes you the ball, that's not because he's saying, hey, here, it's your turn to fuck up an ISO. It's because I'm running and relocating, and it's your job to now find where that is. And when Draymond was out, that was a problem. And then Draymond comes back, and it's like, oh, that's what's happening. Then you still got guys that are resistant, guys like Kelly Oubre. Yeah. But right, now you're in your third year. The people that you didn't want are gone. The people who at least try to get it now get it. Now you watch them play, and it's, so you think about that first win they had was against the Lakers. Steph didn't play that great. Yeah. And you could argue up until this point, up until last night, Steph hasn't played to his standard this season. But what's happened is the Warriors are defending like they used to.
Right.
And offensively, everybody gets it now. They get it. And so the offense creates, the offense provides, even when Steph isn't superhuman.
So to me, you tell Marcus, you obviously see them more than either of us do, but every time I see them, Otto Porter's doing something good. And I said Otto was going to help them because he's a perfect fit temperamentally for them. And I'm wondering if that is indeed the case so far.
Man, that dude don't be missing, yo. Like,
dude, I told you.
It's crazy.
I told you. Like, corner threes and baseline. That's what that dude does.
This dude is going to be really good at it. He's going to be 75 years old. It's going to be hella kids at his house for Christmas.
Right.
And he's going to be like, y'all don't know nothing about this shooting. And he's going to take him outside, and he's not going to miss. And they're not going to believe any of the stories. They're not going to believe the jerseys he had. They're going to believe the mid-range jumpers he kept knocking down at 75 years old. Like, that dude shoots like that, yo. He really, like, Steph going crazy on the sideline, like, running around, like he amazes them, because like if his feet are set and he's like shooting a shot, it's a bucket. And it's kind of wild. Steve is playing him as a small ball center. He's playing Otto Porter as a stretch five. That's how well he shoots. He can't guard anybody as a stretch five, but he's like, yo, just go ahead and hit this three.
right. Exactly.
Otto Porter is the perfect example of what happens a lot in the NBA, where someone is good and then they get compensated and maybe they get overcompensated.
Yeah.
And by virtue of the overcompensation, people say he sucks.
Right.
And then at some point, the composition comes back in line. And I'm like, oh, he's so good. How? Who could have known? I'm like, yeah, right. Well, he was always good. He wasn't good like that good to the point of the pay, but he's a contributor, you know.
When he was here with the Wizards and he was the third or fourth option, right? Everybody loved him. You know what I mean? Like, he was beloved. But then all of a sudden, because the Wizards, again, they, in those days, didn't do what you're supposed to do, which is sign the guy before he becomes too expensive for you to sign. They tried to play hardball and wound up costing them $28 million additional dollars per year, or $28 million more, I should say, to sign him. And then you're right. I mean, it was, oh, he's making $108 million. He's not worth it. Of course he's not worth it. Nobody said he was worth it. That's what he got. That doesn't mean he's worth it. But, you know, so he's back to being, you know, third, fourth level Otto, which is perfect for him and perfect for the Warriors. So worked out.
Yeah, and he's moving without the ball. He's, like you guys say, he's moving, he's relocating, he's in the corner, he's cutting, he's hitting shots those are his shots. Again, the offense provides. He doesn't have to do or try to be something, because he went to Chicago, and the expectation, I guess, there was that he had to be something.
They was like, show us that $100 million guy.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I don't do that.
Not him. Not him. You know, he's not a one option. He's not a two option, really. Mm-hmm. But he's a great third or fourth option, which is, again, what he is. Now, we've been talking about good teams, you know, like the Warriors and Miami and Denver. I want to talk about bad teams right now and get to your expertise. I mean, as somebody who was with, you know, the Suns teams that were struggling back in the day. Boston and New Orleans, to me, is what I would say so far.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
And New Orleans, okay, you can kind of explain away New Orleans' new coach, best player, nowhere close to being ready to play, and all kinds of drama with that off the court. It still doesn't mean it's good that they're struggling as bad as they're struggling. But Boston, my goodness, I get it. I know Ime's a new coach, but you've got two all-stars on that team, you know, and arguably a top 15, top 12 player in Jason Tatum. I think we'd all agree, right? And not only are they not winning, but they're already Marcus Smart calling out his two stars, saying they got to pass the ball more. They got to trust the other teammates more. And Ime saying he messed up on an end of game situation the other day. I mean, my question is, when does panic set in when you get off to a really bad start like those two teams have?
Well, if you're New Orleans, I mean, I don't – even if Zion were healthy, I would have been like, I don't think you're going to be very good this year.
Yeah, they
just look at that roster is not that they basically set
this,
the table.
This isn't surprising them.
I mean, like they set a dinner table with the candles and the mood lighting and stuff, and they had a little placement that said for Chris Paul. And then, hey guys, I got caught up. I'm not gonna make it.
Right.
Yeah, it's not going to be so much of a romantic dinner anymore. You might
and
as well.
And then they crossed out Chris Paul and wrote in Kyle Lowry, and he was like, "Man,
yeah." Like, there's a massive point guard sized hole there.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, and it the what makes it worse is they had a point guard in Lonzo Ball who's playing really well now for Chicago.
In
order to give up the bird in the hand to chase after. Two in the bush.
Two in the bush, yeah.
But the bush was empty.
Right.
So, so that's what's happening. You know, you could point to the kid from Charlotte whose name escapes me every time.
Oh, Devontae Graham.
Devontae Graham, yeah. Like you yeah. could point, but that's he's not a point guard.
But no, not a star, not a starter. Not a point guard. I would agree with that.
Kira yeah. Lewis, not a point guard, or not a starting point guard in this league, right? Alexander Walker, combo guard, yeah. can make plays, not a pure point guard. Right. So there's this hole there, and then you say Brandon Ingram's been hurt, and then you say Zion's been out.
Yeah,
DNP fat, right? look, let's call it what it is. So,
oh man, when did you come, did you see Shaq and Chuck? Yeah. Chuck saying
that's a Hall like of, you that's and I Hall had a baby. Fame. That's one of so Shaq. Cold. That's one of Chuck's Hall of Fame lines.
So, that's so cold. God, yeah. it's cold. Go ahead, Amit. I'm sorry.
So I don't know how you realistically say, oh, we're supposed to be better than this. Why? What gives you that idea? What gives you that impression?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Particularly seeing who they haven't lost to, like. The Anaheim Amigos, they lost to the Warriors. They lost to the Suns. They've been getting their head beat in by pretty good teams, right?
So, right.
You sit back and you say, that's expected. Now, the problem in New Orleans is that my friend, David Griffin, my old boss, he painted himself into this corner.
Yeah.
When you, in your first 2 years, you fire two coaches. When you're year three, you got... on your third coach, you've accelerated maybe the problem isn't the coach conversation.
Right.
So typically,
you've used those bullets already.
Exactly. Yes. So typically, this new front office comes in. Hey, we're really excited, so-and-so, and this is our coach. Cool. And you give that dude 2.5, 3 years. And then you fire him and say, he wasn't the right guy. But this next guy is the right guy. And you give that next guy 2.5, 3 years. And so by the time you fire your second coach, it's been 5 to 6 years.
You've been doing
this. Yeah. And you got time to do things and set roots and you know, convince people that you're the guy or whatever. When you fire the coach and fire the coach again, you've accelerated your own timeline. Because now we're on coach three and we're like, well, are you sure you know what you're doing? That's kind of the situation where Griff is in. Can they panic? Let's assume they panic. What are you going to do? You show me what they
can
do.
That's the question. Yeah, I'm not sure. That's what I'm wondering. Like, how do you fix this?
Sell a team and go to Seattle.
No, come on.
That's one way to fix it.
Well, it's one way to fix it. Yeah. But I hope it. I hope I like the people in New Orleans. I don't want anybody to lose their team.
New Orleans is great.
It's a great city.
Hey, I'm jilted over here. If Oakland can lose their teams, everybody else's game. So
yeah, I have just said that I don't think the Pelicans will ever be. Not only will they not be the number one team in town, which everybody understands, but it's like number two doesn't even exist. You know what I mean? Like it's like Saints, nothing, Pelicans.
Like, Saints might be number two, Marty, if you include LSU.
That's what I'm saying. It's like the Saints are so big there. Like I don't think anything can. It would be like another team trying to be in San Antonio.
So this is what I would argue. This is what I argue, DA. I would say that once upon a time, people said the same thing about the Raptors. The name of the organization owns was literally called Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment. They didn't even do Monument. Right. They didn't even do it like the Wizards did, like a generic name that encompasses everybody.
Gargantuan Sports and Entertainment.
Yeah, the Knicks are owned by, you know, Cablevision and Jim Dolan. It's not like the Rangers are owned by Knicks Entertainment. Like in Toronto, you see that when you walk in the building, you know who owns this place.
Right. No, that's true. That's fair.
Because they stuck with it and because the team was successful for a sustained amount of time, they managed to teach a country, not just a city, a country to love a sport that they had no connection to.
Also, they have 3 million people. Yeah, like, that's the biggest. Matters, yeah. Right? New Orleans, 400,000?
And Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment is worth like a kajillion billion dollars.
They are very rich.
Share to go after in Toronto. I just don't
know. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, but that's a separate conversation. It's not about whether the Pelicans could be number two to the Saints. That's, is New Orleans as a market big enough to support a second professional franchise, whatever it is, right? That's a separate question to me. It's less to do with like the Pelicans not being good so much as like Yes. Is it the same thing? Like, right. do we need an NBA team in Oklahoma City? Do we need one in Memphis? Regardless of how the fan base feels, there's like a right. financial argument that, hey, we could solve a lot of these issues if we had a team in Seattle and a team in, you know, pick a place, Vancouver or wherever, you know, another major city, Kansas City, wherever.
Yeah.
But to answer the question about the Celtics, now right. this one's interesting because while Ime Udoka is new.
Yes.
The characters are not. Right. So Marcus Smart isn't new guy. He's not Dennis Schroeder saying, hey, they need to pass more. This is a guy who's been there for a few years, who's seen them since when they were
beef.
Crawling, right. seen them since they were toddlers, and now they're big, strapping young men who can go out there and get 25 apiece each any given night. Now, here's the problem, and here's the part where I agree with Marcus Smart. For any NBA player, there is my personal success, and then there's my team success. Now, usually, you hope the more successful I am personally, the more successful the team is, right? I'm playing better. We're winning more games. But at some point, and it's at different points for different people, your personal success goes this way, and team success sometimes goes this way a little bit, and sometimes it's a full-on U-turn.
Yeah.
And I think what's happening with the Celtics, what Marcus Smart is saying, is like, yeah, your numbers look great. Yeah, your efficiency looks great. Yeah, you're going to be on an all-star ballot. Yeah, you might be All-NBA. That's not helping us win games, though.
Yeah.
People watching you play basketball isn't helping us win games. You're getting, what, 2-3 assists a game on what? The bailout? Because you tried every trick in the book and it wasn't working? Like, he looks open. That's not – that doesn't work. It doesn't work well. I mean, the best version of it worked in Houston, and even that fell apart because guys got sick of just standing around and waiting. So that's what he's trying to express. Now, again – this ain't the first year they've been playing like this. They've been playing like this for a while. So when people are like, how could Marcus Smart say that out loud? I ask, you think that's the first time he ever said that behind closed doors? Like he never tried doing it the quiet way?
Mm-hmm.
Usually they go, you know, they push this because the quiet way didn't work. So now I'm going to do it out loud.
They look like a team that's not having any fun whatsoever. No fun, no joy whatsoever playing with each other.
And Ime's in a tough spot because A, first time head coach, right? B, trying to convince guys who have been successful, right? They've been to conference finals, and they've been, in Tatum's case, all-star. In Jaylen Brown's case, everyone talks about him as he's going to be an all-star. So it's hard to tell guys who have been successful, hey, you know the way you've been doing things? Completely wrong.
Right.
They're not going to be receptive to that. And then making matters harder, I don't know if this is something that's top of mind for Ime, or maybe it's just something subliminal. But when the guy you're replacing, what's he do now?
He's the GM.
So I'm going to say, hey, boss, the shit that you guys did last year, all bullshit. I don't know what the hell you were thinking. We're going to run this thing. It's so much better than whatever hack coach was here before. Oh, wait, that was you. So there's like something subliminal about, okay, I'm here to tweak. I'm not here to overhaul.
Yeah.
Right. As a first-time head coach. Now, if it was, you know, pick your name, Alvin Gentry or Tom Thibodeau or someone who's been around the block and knows how they want to coach, it's a different story. It's like, hey, this is what you signed up for. But your first-time head coach, this is my first job. It's the same reason why Derek Fisher ran the triangle. When he got to New York. Right? Like, my boss really loves this because that's how he coached. So how do you say we're not going to do that? And when Derek Fisher did do that, that was the end of him in New York. Not the wins and losses. It's the fact that he abandoned the triangle that ended his good standard with Phil Jackson.
Right.
Amin, I want to ask you, which is, I think, a pretty good segue to, you know, the later topic, but what is it about Doc Rivers and drama that seems to bring out the best? I have no idea how Philly's this good. Like, it's unbelievable to me. I expected them to be where Boston is, but somehow Doc Rivers seems to thrive in these settings.
No, I'm going to tell you why. Because, and this is, I'm as pro Ben Simmons as a talent, maybe not on his behavior, or how he's handled the situation. But as a talent, I believe he's one of the best players in the league. I believe if he went somewhere else where he was the star, that I believe he went to Sacramento, they'd be in the mix immediately.
We agree. You and I completely agree on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Having said that, Philadelphia is blessed. The reason why Ben Simmons isn't happy is because Philadelphia is blessed with a player that's even better than him.
Yeah, right.
And so when you say, but we don't have Ben Simmons, all right, is Embiid there? He has been for, until this COVID thing. Okay. Is Tobias Harris, who, again, talk about cusp all-star players who've just never been an all-star, he's one of those guys. You want to make an all-star team who've never been an all-star. It's like him, Jaylen Brown, you know, Monte Ellis, you know, Eddie Johnson, Jamal Crawford. Like, it's all these guys that we all respect as really talented offensive players. And because of the numbers, they never got to be all-stars. So it's Embiid, it's Tobias Harris. Then you've got Seth Curry, who's off to a ridiculous start to the season shooting. Korkmaz, who's shooting well. And then Maxey and, you know, Shake Milton's back. They've got a team, is my point.
Yeah.
They've got, it's not like, oh, woe is us. What do we do? Ben, please come back. That was my thing when Ben Simmons said, I'm sitting out. I said, bro, this ain't like if Jimmy Butler said, I'm going to sit out, where it would fall apart. And it did as soon as he left.
Or it's Anthony Davis, right?
Or Anthony Davis or James Harden. Like, they have a legit, not like a guy who could be good like Karl Anthony Towns. They have a legit MVP caliber player. Yes. They're not going to miss you. Are they as good without you? No. Can they win a championship without you? No. But is things going to fall apart? And like, we need to do whatever it takes to make Ben happy. No, they're capable of sitting back, kicking up their feet and be like, we'll bide our time until one of these other teams that doesn't want to offer us fair value gets desperate because their season's going down the tubes, like Minnesota, right? Where you got your guy liking tweets that say, can't wait for Karl Anthony Towns to be freed of the shackles of the Timberwolves.
Right. Like, he was hacked. Didn't you hear?
Oh, no. It was hacked, but also hacked. And also his manager said, yeah, I did it. And also they never unliked the tweet. It's still liked.
Right. Yes. Yes.
Also, I love the fact that a hacker would spend all the time breaking into the Twitter account of an NBA player. And the biggest thing that they could come up with was like, can't wait to like some tweets. That coincidentally would be something that he might like, you know?
Right.
I'm
not sure, but you know what? After the Jimmy Butler experience in Minnesota, I'd be very surprised if that was if they went that route again. You know what I mean?
They're 3-6 and they've lost 5 in a row. And your star player,
we all agree on
your
it,
star player. Just, like at some point, again, and it's an interim guy there, so it's not like he's got the job. No, it's not like he's like with Griff's situation. Like I've got 3 years to fire this coach, and then 3 more years after that, I'm interim. I got to prove to new owners and current owners that I'm the guy.
Yeah, that's true. But Sachin Gupta, who's the GM there now, is a analytics guy, and I'd be surprised. And he worked with Daryl, so I would be surprised if he was the guy that pulled the trigger. Now, if the new owner says, "Hey, let's get Ben Simmons," then you got to go get Ben Simmons. I understand that. And maybe that happens with the new owners.
I would argue.
But I don't think he's the guy that's going to volunteer to do that trade.
I would argue that a guy that's worked with Daryl Morey is more likely to do a deal with him than someone who hasn't. The familiarity, the ability to take some of the things he says and not take it personally because you know him, right? I mean, there's a reason why Kevin Garnett got traded to the Boston Celtics, right?
Correct.
Right. Sure. There's also a reason why Eldon Campbell and Eddie Jones didn't get traded to Minnesota for Tom Gugliotta. And it wasn't because the Lakers said no. It was because, Kevin McHale decided I won't do a deal with the Lakers ever.
Yeah. Right.
So there's stuff there that familiarity actually, I think, works an advantage. And you're right, D.A., maybe he's not the one to take that leap. But again, do any of us believe if they stay status quo, garbage again, he's going to keep the job? You think?
Probably not.
Right?
But
you've got one way out of this. If you want, again, we're not talking about can the Timberwolves become a championship. No, I'm just talking about you're the guy who has a job on a temporary basis. Right. How do I get it permanently? I've got to bring success here, and success is not going to come by those guys in the locker room. I'm sorry. I know we're excited about Anthony Edwards and his fun quotes and all that. I know everyone thought that D'Lo and Kat playing together, they're best friends. What could go wrong, right? But the reality is nobody in that room has a track record of influencing success.
Yeah.
Right? Like of being the guy who created the culture for success.
Wait.
Well, Pat Bev is there.
I was being facetious. DA was being serious.
I was being serious. He was on good teams.
No. I didn't say he was on. No, because D'Angelo Russell.
Creating the culture.
D'Angelo Russell was on good teams.
Who created the culture of winning in Miami? You know what I mean? One of the greatest players of all time did that. You know what I mean? Like, so.
But even when they went down, you've got guys in that locker room who are about the right things, A, and B, are listened to and respected by everybody in the locker room, right? Udonis hasn't had to play a minute. But we saw in the finals 2 years ago, 2 seasons ago, 1 year, I don't know how long ago it was. But we saw in the finals, he's barking at everybody and nobody says a word and nobody's rolling their eyes and nobody's getting up. You think Patrick Beverly holds that same sort of respect? He didn't with the Clippers. I'll tell you right now.
Not with the Clippers, yeah.
So maybe in Minnesota
where nobody's won anything, I think he might. But we'll see. I mean, that's one of those things where you have to see.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Now, speaking of Haslam, this is a great segue because there's a story involving the word Haslam that I want you to recall to retell to our listeners.
That's good.
I have to ask you about the story that was in ESPN last week. Uh-huh. That a very detailed, very, very good story by Baxter Holmes, who spent months reporting it out. Talked to, 70 people over the course of the last several months?
I was not one of them. People think I was, and I said, what about my history? Ever says anonymous source.
Right. Yeah, no, I know you were not, but now that you've met, Exactly.
I've been waiting.
Exactly. Now, I am assuming if you listen to Hoops Adjacent or you listen to the Athletic NBA show, I assume you are an NBA fan of some sort, so you know most of the details of that particular story, I would think. Accusations of racism directly tied to Sarver, who supposedly used the N-word multiple times in conversation with Earl Watson, who was the interim coach there for a few years ago. But also, and I think this is the more disturbing part, is just an incredibly toxic culture for women who work there, you know, up and down the organization, not even really including Sarver, that nobody has really said, no, that didn't happen. All they've said is, well, you know, it wasn't good, but it's not as bad as they're making it out to be. So I want to ask you, I've listened to a couple of the other interviews you've given on this, and I know you've said that Some of it you saw yourself. Some of the stories you saw yourself. Some you may have heard about and some you didn't know about. The main question I have with regard to Sarver is not that is this guy hard to work for and he is, you know, is he an a-hole and all those sorts of things. We already know the answer to those things. But was there no one in his circle, not employees, but I'm talking about people in ownership, and minority owners in that group, people that may have been affiliated somehow with the Suns, that did business with the Suns, surely they heard these stories. Was there no one at his level that said, Robert, come on, you can't do these things. You can't say these things and own this team. Not in this market. Maybe in other markets you could, but not here.
I'm reminded of the line from The Wire. You follow drugs, you get drug dealers. You follow money, you don't know where you're going to end up.
Yeah.
So when you ask, did anyone in the building or anything say anything? Well, then you're going to find a guy here or a guy there, an employer. But when you ask his peers, other rich people, is that what you're asking? Do other rich people find his behavior objectionable? Yeah. Rich people who look at the rest of us as eminently replaceable and just kind of, my cousin told me a story. It's funny. My cousin told me a story about Robert having a full-on conversation with him for like a good 5-6 minutes before realizing you're not a mean, and then just turning and walking away. Now, my cousin, by comparison, I'm 6 feet tall.
Jesus,
my cousin is 6'4", right?
Oh, God.
At the time, I'm probably 150 on a good day. My cousin is upwards of 200 pounds.
Yeah.
I wear contacts. My cousins wear glasses. So it's like the idea that anyone, even like the most quote-unquote colorblind, which, by the way, that I think is a funny anecdote, Robert Sarver is colorblind, literally. He literally he's seeing the purple one, the orange one. He's like, which one is which? But the fact that someone could confuse two completely different proportioned human beings. Forget about facial features. Let's just assume me and my cousin are twins. We're not. But like,
you're not,
he's 6'4", 200 plus pounds. I'm 6 feet, 150.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm not even sure how much of it is racism, how much of it is just rich people live in a bubble of their own. And they don't believe, many of them, I don't think, believe in any of the stuff that we generally regard as
forget equality, just humanity, right?
I mean, just think about the type of person who would freely pass around a picture of his wife in a bikini.
Yeah. Yeah.
And make like do you think that's like a real equal footing partnership happening there? Or like, you know? I'm not saying, look, hey man,
like
maybe Penny Sarver was down for that. But I'm just saying it's like
they don't believe
it
in
takes
humanity.
A certain kind of person to feel that level of comfort in a work setting, right? Regardless of how you it was because it was a good fit and we wanted to look at like, was it? Because I've been present for stories that he's told about his wife that I guarantee you were not work setting, you know, testing things out for the market. He's a guy who desperately wants to be in the in crowd. And the in crowd in an NBA organization are the players. And the players, in his mind, want to talk about women and want to be quote unquote cool. He wants to be cool, like the players. So he talks about things and talks about things in a way that he thinks will be received as, wow, our owner is real cool. And instead, people snicker and like, whoa, that was kind of crazy, and walk away off of that.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing that happens here in Washington with Dan Snyder. And, this is my experience with most, not all, but most owners, is that they are desperately desperately in need of being one of the fellas. Mm-hmm. You know, they do all of these things to players and to people in organizations to make themselves feel like, or to make people, they want people to feel like, oh, he's cool. He's one of the guys and all this BS. And it's nonsense, of course. And no player believes that. They understand that's why people keep coming to Washington to steal Dan Snyder's money. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a secret to get paid by Dan Snyder and laugh all the way to the bank. And it just amazes me that there's nobody like when I took this job with The Athletic 3 years ago, the first person I wanted to hire was Greg Lee, who's now at the Boston Globe. He was here for 2 years. And the first thing I said to Greg is, Greg, here's what I need you to do on a daily basis. I need you to tell me, David, that's the dumbest fucking idea I've ever heard of in my life. That's what I need you to do. And if that's the case, I need you to say that to me, because I have an ego like everybody else. I think all my ideas are brilliant and everything I say is gold, and who wouldn't want to listen to me, right? So you need somebody to pop your bubble, and I just can't believe there's nobody who ever pops Sarver's bubble on anything.
Well, I mean,
it just runs rampant.
You saw what happened.
Decades.
You saw what happened in the story. Rich Paul popped his bubble.
Yeah.
And he flipped out. Because when your entire existence, and remember, I remind people all the time, Robert is not Vivek Ranadive, who arrived in this country with $12 in his pocket and built a fortune.
Yeah, right.
Or even Mark Cuban, a guy who had a decent middle-class upbringing and then came up with an idea.
But created his wealth.
Robert Sarver, the legend of Robert Sarver is that when he was 21, he started his own bank. And it's like, wait a second.
Started his own bank.
How do you start your own bank?
How does one start their own bank?
And I remember asking that when I read the bio, and someone's like, because his dad gave him the money to start a bank with.
Right.
Like, oh, you mean he was born rich, but they try to make it into this folklore kind of Paul Bunyan, he was out here.
Right.
You know, making flapjacks on a on a skillet the size of Wyoming, right? So if this is someone whose entire life, money has never been an object for him, right? Yeah. His possessions, what he's able to get, what he's able to do. He doesn't hear no a whole lot, like most billionaires. Billionaires don't hear the word no a lot, right?
Yeah.
Which is why many billionaires come to sports and fail. Because sports, particularly salary cap sports, you can't just throw money and say, oh, it'll fix itself.
Right.
And sports, unlike business, and I tell this to people all the time, in business, you know what, man? Pepsi's number two to Coke in the soft drink market.
Right. But
Pepsi makes a lot of money, and Pepsi's shareholders are happy. And a good year for Pepsi is we made money for our shareholders.
Right.
And maybe we got a little bit more market share off of Coke. That's great too.
Right.
In sports, yes, we have a financial, like we'd like to make money, right? We don't want to be hemorrhaging money, but also, there's this other scoreboard where we keep track of how good you are. And oh, guess what? If you're not the guy at the top, nobody gives a fuck. Right? Like we talked about, is it? Milwaukee. Right? Yeah. Milwaukee in the middle of the playoffs, in the middle of, I believe, the conference finals. Everyone was talking about as soon as they lose, they're firing Bud and Rick Carlisle is going to be the head coach.
Right.
Now, in what other industry can you say, what are your performance metrics? Well, over the last 3 years, we've had the best record in the league, and our best player has been recognized as one of the best players and received all these awards. And if you want to drill down some more, we've had the top five offense and the top five defense. And it's like,
two-time MVP.
But you didn't win the big one, so fuck you, get out of here. New CEO. There's no business that's like that in the world other than sports. So that's a place I think billionaires are. This is a weird place for them. And you're dealing with that. You're dealing with the emotions of people telling you you're awful and nobody liked you or whatever, right? Just fans. I'm not even talking about the actual opposite. Right. You're awful because you ruined this team, right? Or you'll have like Greta come into the city council meeting, talk about he's so tight when he walks, he squeaks, right?
Yes.
Greta's not talking about how he's treated women or using the N-word or any of that. That is literally talking about the service level, like the team is garbage and it's your fault.
Right, so, and we hate you And we hate you.
So it's like, where is the one place where I can go, tell some stories, have everybody in the room laugh, and feel like a big shot, feel like the cool kid?
Yeah.
You don't do that at the bank. I bet you don't do any of that shit at the bank.
No.
If it's his bank, he probably doesn't. No,
it's funny. I'm
curious. I mean, you know, there was a lot of public statements from guys back in Sarver, which was so weird to me because it wasn't like any of this was not known, right?
Not weird at all.
But I'm just curious, how do you exist as a coach, as a GM, as a player under this guy, especially now that this is public? Whereas if it remains private, you can be like, yeah, I'm getting this money. But is this possible to do it? And, you know, even you got out, right? Like, you were like, yo, I'm out.
I mean, I won't lie. Like, if we had remained successful, I don't think I would have left. If I remained working for the people. The problem is, as it so happens, if you're an asshole in some areas, you tend to be an asshole in a lot of areas, right?
Yeah, show me how you do one
very,
thing,
very rarely
right?
are people asshole. Yeah, very rarely are people silo assholes. Like, I'm an asshole when it comes to women. But everything else, I'm really shrewd.
But I'm
like,
really good with, seniors, I'm really good right? with yeah. you know,
minorities.
Minorities, yeah.
Right. So, like, obviously, I was part of an exodus of a lot of people that left because it just continuously, it never got better. It never got better. He never seemed to learn, right? Even if he did, eventually he'd come back and meddle again and all that. You ask how people survive. It's 30 of these jobs or 30 of these teams, right?
Yeah.
So how do people survive working for Donald Sterling, right? Because, you know, well, Donald Sterling, by the way, this is one of my favorite things. I was out at a restaurant last week after the story broke, and I overheard a conversation from white people in the corner saying, I don't believe it, because if Robert Sarver were racist, then why would Larry Fitzgerald be involved there? And I said, Donald Sterling had Elgin Baylor as his GM for like 25 years.
Yeah, but that's under the cover.
Anyone
of
wants
anonymity.
To point to that
like,
as
once
like,
it got out,
see?
Then it
I
was like, it's about saving face.
Because
even, you know, Chris Paul, they're turning jerseys in and out saying this guy's got to go. So I'm wondering now that it's out, James Jones is on wax saying, this is not the guy I know. Right. But now the whole world knows this is your guy.
So, one, unlike Donald Sterling, even though, again, everybody knew Donald Sterling was racist, unlike Donald Sterling, there is no recording or email or there's no tape.
Exactly. No tape.
It's all he said, she said. So, when James Jones says, that's not the guy I know, it's because someone said a story. I'm saying an opposite story, right? Number two, and this is really important, there were only two NBA players and one account executive who put their name on the story, right? Earl Watson, Corliss Williamson. Everybody else was anonymous. Everybody else who came out and had their name on it spoke in, let's say, positive. Although, like, some of these statements are like three words long. That's not the guy I know. Right? Like, very careful to show support without necessarily like throwing my life on the line for this guy in case something comes out. So you say, why would Steve Kerr do this? Why would Jared Dudley come out and say this? Why would or James Jones? Yeah. Right. And all of them, to varying degrees, are people who want to continue to work in this league, right? You think
there is truth to that? There is definitely truth to that. I mean,
you think you come out and if you're one of these guys and you say James Jones, say hell yeah, this is important, da da da, and you know speaks very forcefully, if not accusatory, like, I haven't seen this, but if these allegations are true, we need a full investigation, da 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 da. First of all, how long do you think his job is going to last in Phoenix? One. Two, who do you think is going to hire the guy that when shit went bad, went out while still on the company clock and announced, my boss is a shitbag? Because guess what? If you think Robert Sarver is the only owner
of course,
this type of behavior in his past and present.
They didn't want to make Sterling sale.
Like that, and that's the problem. We always treat these things as like, that was the one. No,
well, that's
not.
Why I think it's laughable that there are people saying, well, they're, you know, that they think there's actually a chance that the league is going to make him sell.
No,
like, are
no
you
chance.
Nuts?
Zero
are
chance.
Nuts? Like, there's There's exactly. They only made him sell because there was a tape.
There's a tape. And more importantly, also, they hated Donald Sterling.
Yes.
29 owners hated him. And the one guy that was protecting him was David Stern. Because he did David Stern a solid way, way back in 1984 or whatever. And that's why that alliance was formed. Even as David Stern himself knew, this dude is crazy racist.
They're setting themselves
Robert,
up.
While maybe not winning a popularity contest,
the bar,
doesn't arrive at the level of hate that of all 29 guys can't stand him. That's one.
Yeah.
And two, there's no tape, which means if we vote this guy out, we've just effectively lowered the standard. We lowered the standard of getting someone out. If enough people just say a story about you, and also if my other owners are like, I could live without him. Right. If that can't be the threshold, because then everybody's fair game.
Right. No, I agree. Now tell if you don't mind retelling the story that involves the word Haslam.
Oh.
I think it does speak very, very well to what was going on there at the time.
Thank you, David Aldridge, Hall of Famer, for recognizing the value in the story in a way that Dan Levitard, who's not in the Hall of Fame of anything, didn't recognize it. He thought it was just navel gazing on my part. So we used to have a defensive set. When we were playing a team that had a really great post player and a player whom we did not respect shooting the ball from that distance was post entry, the guy guarding the post entry would hear the call Haslam and fall back and sit in the post player's lap to make that entry pass basically impossible.
Right.
Basically, sag. We say basically either you hit that shot or you throw the ball somewhere else, but it's not coming here. And it was developed because we used to play Miami, and Shaq obviously was a big problem. And Haslam at the time wasn't that great of a shooter. He got better at it because more and more teams started doing that. So that's why the call was Haslam. So on game days, we would play pickup ball. Me, the video coordinators, the trainers, the director of team security, sometimes the assistant coaches would show up and play on the main floor before the players show up, probably like 2:30. When players would start showing up at around 4 because of a 7 o'clock game. And we, you know, you talk trash, it's competitive and stuff, and you yell out stuff like that. You Haslam, when you're just part of it is just to disrespect the hell out of the guy with the ball. Like, I don't believe you're going to hit this shot, whatever, you know. So one day, Robert's walking by and he decides he wants to play. He's, hey, let me get in with you guys. And really quickly, everybody on my team started like, oh, I got so-and-so, I got so-and-so. And I didn't realize what was happening until it was too late. Like, oh, they did the equivalent of touch your nose, and the last person not touching their nose is it. And I was a dumbass like, why is everyone touching their nose? So I had to guard Robert. Now, if you're playing against your boss, and you know your boss is sensitive and temperamental.
Can't get up in his shit.
But also wants to feel like, what you say, D.A.? He's one of the guys, right? Oh, it's all fun over here. So I have to, A,
5-year-old,
give him enough token defense so he feels like I'm trying. He's impacting the game, and we're all having fun.
Right.
But I can't actually guard him because I will fuck him up. Like, he wouldn't be able to dribble the ball once. He wouldn't be able to shoot the ball. Like, he just wouldn't be able to do anything. And I'm not saying this out of great prowess at playing basketball.
Better than the owner.
I'm better than the 55-year-old 5'8 guy who's oh my god. Be like that old Stuart Scott commercial. Remember when they're playing kids at the YMCA and
he's
just smacking things out. So we start playing, and you know, I'm like, oh, he got by me. Oh, I tried to reach and he taught, you know, like just doing enough. But like, as the game goes on, you're trying to win also. And you're also, you forget. So there's a point where our director of team security, I think it was him, I'm not sure, but I think it was him because he was a burly guy.
Yeah.
And so he was posting up. And so I knew I had to help. So I drop back and instinctively out my mouth comes the word Haslam. Mm-hmm. Right. Part of it is because I'm helping. And part of it is because I know he's not going to hit that shot, but I forgot who I'm guarding. Right.
Right.
So he shoots it. He misses. We rebound. And he looks at me and he says, just remember,
how do you
Haslam
know
has a job. Now, I believe he's joking.
Right.
But I also believe if I continued down this path of opening him, openly humiliating him.
Yes.
In purely a basketball sense.
Sure.
Right? Saying, hey, we don't believe in your shot, da-da-da, rebounding, talking shit when I make shots, going by him as opposed to like dribbling and then passing, whatever. I would have been fired. Ask me how I know. Ask me how I know this.
How do you know?
Because when Robert first bought the team, early on in his tenure, there was a security guy, you know, an arena security guy, who during a game, Robert's kids ran across the floor. Now, action was on the other end of the floor.
Right.
And they kind of cut the corner across the floor from the basket to where their dad sits courtside. They cut as opposed to walking around. The security guard kind of like gently, not like in a, he knows who they are. They look exactly like him. Whoa, guys, you can't go this way. You got to go around. That guy was fired.
Jesus.
Don't talk to my kids. The message is, this is my playground. And if you play by my rules, whatever my rules are, you're fine. Hey, I'm one of the guys. They're always one of the guys, DA, until the fulcrum moment comes where like, would one of the guys react this way? No, they wouldn't.
Right.
A billionaire would react this way because they're not used to hearing the word no.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Dusty Baker didn't get the guy, didn't get the whoever it was that fired that grabbed Darren Baker, got him off the plate in the World Series for saving his kid's life. You know, so. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Whose kid was that?
It's not ridiculous.
With the Giants, right? Whose kid was it? Was it Barry Bonds' kid?
No, it was Dusty's kid.
Oh, it was Dusty's kid. It was Dusty's kid. Yeah.
Darren was the bat boy, and he came out, and he crossed home plate. The game was going on. Somebody was rounding third and scored, and there was another guy coming, and the guy who scored grabbed Darren by the scruff and just pulled him away
before there's another
the other guy,
guy
ran
up.
Him over, you know? So, it's ridiculous. But it's not ridiculous. It's just life in the NBA. So what are you going to do? That's what happens. So So again, nothing's going to happen to Robert Sarver other than a fine that's going to be ridiculously low.
So
they're not going to take. Well, I'll give the NBA the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they take a pick away. Maybe they do something serious, but I kind of doubt it.
So Mark Cuban had an organization with documented, including police involvement, domestic violence, of documented. Examples of his CEO
toxic work culture for women,
like sexually harassing people, and they didn't get Dr. Pick, and it was a $10 million fine, I believe, or something in that
$10 million, right?
And
she has in the seat cushion,
and but I mean, look, if you've been around billionaires again, like, and nobody's saying, oh, it's just $10 million. That's how they care about that shit too.
That's how they keep score.
So he fired a bunch of people. He hired the lady who came from AT&T,
Cynthia Marshall
from AT&T to be the CEO. They've done things. But by and large, if I'm Donnie Nelson at the time and now Nico Harrison, if I'm Rick Carlisle at the time and now Jason Kidd, if I'm Dirk Nowitzki at the time and now Luka Doncic, that scandal hasn't impacted my life one bit. It has not impacted our ability to do basketball business. At all.
Right.
I expect the same thing to happen here. There'll be people who are going to get fired. There are going to be some new hires. They're going to say some things. They're going to make a statement. And by the way, Mark Cuban was a guy who said, whoa, I didn't know this was happening. My bad. We'll fix it. Not an assault for 2 weeks of just press release after press release. Of saying that I didn't do it, even though, I did do it that one time. And so I think that's a big difference there. But ultimately, I think it's a fine. And maybe Robert gets suspended for like a year, a season. You can't be around the team.
Okay, so they give him the Marge Schott treatment.
Yeah.
Or the Steinbrenner treatment. Okay.
And that's the maximum. Like, I just can't see. Selling is just out of the question because, again, like we said, they're not going to open up the door for the circumstances to be applied everywhere across this league.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's a – It's a fascinating tale, and I doubt, you know, like you said, there's if you think Robert Sarver's the only guy who's got a workplace like this, you are crazy. But Amin, man, I appreciate you so much for coming on. I know you've been they've been hella busy killing you with media requests and stuff, and I know you've done a bunch of these. So I cannot thank you enough for coming on. Stay safe, my bro.
Always,
and,
always.
You know, we will see you down the road, I am sure, and talk some more hoop.
Yes, sir.
All right, my man. Well, look, all of y'alls, Mark said to drop out early, so I'm going to wrap it up. Leave that 5-star review on Apple, Spotify, Google, any place you get this fine American podcast. And like Marcus would say, if it's less than 5 stars, keep it to yourself, you haters. Later.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.